Did you catch President Obama's final news conference yesterday, or coverage of the issues that he was asked about? What stood out to you? We are going to discuss the wide range of issues covered with a guest analyst, issues from race relations to LGBT rights to the future of President Obama's key policies and advice that President Obama has for President-elect Donald Trump, who, after tomorrow's inauguration, is President Donald Trump. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, January 19th. So what are your thoughts about President Obama's legacy and the future of his key policy initiatives? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Very happy to have with us Andra Gillespie, an associate professor of political science at Emory University. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. So this was President Obama's final press conference as president, and he came right out of the gate with some kind words for the media yesterday and its role in society. Let's take a listen.
So America needs you, and our democracy needs you. We need you to establish a baseline of facts and evidence that we can use as a starting point for the kind of reasoned and informed debates that ultimately lead to progress.
So what are your thoughts as to why he had such kind words for the media?
Well, I think there are two things to consider here. One, because this was his last press conference, I think he wanted to leave on a positive note with this press corps that's been following him around for 8 years. So in part, he wanted to kind of tie up that particular loose end in giving niceties to that particular group. He was, very forthright about the fact that he didn't always agree with some of the articles that were written about him, but that he understood why they had to write that and that they weren't always going to be flattering or favorable towards him. Many people read into that comment, though, the implication that he was, I guess, trying to juxtapose his behavior to how many people are concerned about how the Trump administration will treat them. So in part, in the past week, there has been discussion of moving the press room away from the White House into the Executive Office Building, and whether or not that symbolically means that Trump is really going to keep the press at arm's length and going to have an antagonistic relationship with them. And then it also reflects the antagonistic relationship that President-elect Trump appears to have with the press. So his attacking the press at his rallies, his hostile exchange with Jim Acosta, CNN, last week, in his own press conference. I think, for the most part, I would look at that as the way a president ends his term in office, by telling the press, it's been nice working with you. It was nice knowing you. Thank you for all of your hard work.
Yeah. Well, let's talk just a little bit more as a political, science professor. How important is the Fourth Estate when it comes to the functioning of government and our democracy? And do you fear that there is too much of an antagonistic relationship between soon to be President Trump and the White House, for that matter, the media in general?
I think a free press is vitally important. It's one of the reasons why it's enshrined in the First Amendment of our Constitution. The public has a right to know, and our press professionals are the people who help us know, and they facilitate the conveying of information to the public so that we can express our approval or disapproval of what is being done in Washington, in our state capitals, in our local city halls and county commissions. I think the role that they play is vitally important. This is an interesting time for the press. They're getting pressure not just from government, but they're also getting pressure from the market. And so the market has contracted the number of news agencies, and so we've seen in journalism, you know, the size of newsrooms shrink, and that also impedes our ability to be able to know what's going on and to actually know what's going on accurately. I think the thing that concerns me most about President Trump is his depiction of the press as always being dishonest. And it's a great, he's tapping into a discontent with the media. It's not like journalists were respected before mm-hmm. he emerged. And so he's tapping into that discontent, that perception that the media is biased. And now it's come to the point, I think in part because of the language that he has used, that people don't trust anything that's coming out of the mouths of even reputable journalists. And this doesn't mean that you're reputable, and by this I mean your legacy media outlets get everything right 100% of the time, or that they don't make mistakes. But these people are professional. They are conscientious. They mean to do their job well, and when they make mistakes, they own up to them. That's very, very different. And so now that we have now conflated mainstream media with press outlets that are, in fact, biased and open about their bias, and with propaganda that may actually not be true, we're having a hard time helping average citizens, myself included, distinguish between what's real and what's not real. So, you know, I wish that President Trump will tone down that language and understand what's the difference between fake news and real news, and not just attack anything that he finds unfavorable to him as being fake news, because it's not always fake.
Ellen on Facebook says this when asked, you know, what stood out to her. Classy, presidential, honest, poised, disciplined. I loved his comments about the press corps making him be better. His hope in the next generation and his daughters. I loved what he shared with Trump about how big of a job this is. Obama will be missed. I have never understood why there isn't more cooperation for him, or why there wasn't more cooperation for him. I can't write it off to politics as usual. I believe it was driven by a racist atmosphere. Let's move forward, being active and involved. Factovism is necessary. I don't think I've ever heard that before. Factovism. I guess the facts are important. I think that means that. You know, she had a lot to say there, and I guess did you just have a general reaction to Ellen's reaction?
Well, yeah, I want to hone in on the factivism part. I like that word. I may use it from now on. Mm-hmm. Ellen, thank you. I'll give you credit for it. We now dispute what the facts are. We now dispute what actually constitutes good evidence in order to prove particular points. I mourn for that in our country. And as an educator, I feel that it's my job to not tell people what to think, but to tell people how to be discerning of things that are presented to them as facts, and to be able to deploy evidence in a way that's actually going to help them draw informed conclusions. Whatever the end of that is, I can't determine, nor do I want to try to manipulate that. But I think in this country, what this election has taught us is that we are not, and this is on the left and the right, always discerning of what facts are, and we don't always use evidence in a proper way to reach a logical end.
Yeah.
I think that the clarion call for educators, and educators come in many forms. They're in college. They're college professors like me. They're K-12 teachers. They are faith leaders. They are community leaders. They are parents. I think it's everybody's responsibility to tell people how to separate fact from innuendo, how to make sure that before you disseminate information, you verify it. That we use evidence, that we understand the difference between association and causation, and then are very mindful of how we put things together and then jump to conclusions as a result.
Yeah, we will be. We have lots of clips from the news conference yesterday that we'll be sharing and talking about, including some of the advice that President Obama had for President-elect Trump. Obama was asked about race relations. We'll talk more about that and whether or not there would ever be another black president, and we'll share what he had to say about that. And much more. But before we go to our news break, Andra Gillespie, in the only the minute that we have, what stood out to you in that news conference?
Part part of it was when I heard it live. I was actually on another radio program, so I only caught the last couple of questions live. And the last questions where President Obama talked about his daughters, in part I'm thinking of op-ed pieces that I have to write today. So hearing him talk about his wife and his daughters and what their future plans were really stood out to me. You know, his hope for the future. I didn't always agree with him about that part, but his hope for the future, his hope in young people and the things that they've learned growing up in his America, you know, I think we're really compelling and really noteworthy.
Andra Gillespie is our guest. She's an associate professor of political science at Emory University. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will talk more about the issues raised in yesterday's final news conference of President Obama's presidency. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking about the issues that were raised in President Obama's final news conference yesterday. He had a lot to say about the future of his key policies. He had advice for President-elect Donald Trump. He talked about the press. He talked about race relations. He talked about LGBT rights and much more. And we welcome your thoughts and questions on any of these issues or what stood out to you. What are you going to remember President Obama for? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Andra Gillespie, an associate professor of political science at Emory University. And I wanted to, Professor Gillespie, talk a little bit about what President Obama had to say about what any incoming president should do when approaching policy. This comment came up in response to a question about the conflict of in the Middle East. Let's take a listen to President Obama's advice for any incoming new president.
I think it is right and appropriate for a new president to test old assumptions and re-examine the old ways of doing things. But if you're going to make big shifts in policy, just make sure you thought it through.
So what did you read into that?
I mean, I think that's sage advice for anybody. Mm-hmm. And I think you would have given that advice to Hillary Clinton had she won. You know, in the context of this particular president, where we haven't heard a lot of specifics about what his plans are, and where he's new to Washington, he's new to politics formally, you know, I think that that's even more appropriate to be for a novice president who is going to spend, you know, his first year or two in office really figuring out how government works. You know, this isn't somebody who's had governmental experience before, who understands the bureaucracy, who's used to things moving faster than they are structurally designed to work in Washington. And so, you know, he's coming in with the best intentions to blow things up. But he may find that more difficult, and he also may find that where he does succeed in changing the narrative, that there are both positive and negative externalities to his behavior. So, you know, I think President Obama's advice was, you know, deliberately generic, but I think it was something to take heed to.
Let's go to Paul in Menominee Falls. Hi, Paul.
Hi, thanks for the great program. I just think that Obama was very measured. He was always very even-tempered, very inclusive. He was never vindictive. And on top of all that, he was the coolest guy on the block. I thought it was disingenuous of McCain to, every time he gets asked what's about Obama's legacy, he says, well, he was the first black president. And we celebrate that. But it's such a limited comment and perspective, and I think it's just the easy way out because he was so very much more. Thanks for the great program.
Thanks, Paul. So do you think that, Andra Gillespie, that Obama was the coolest president ever?
Well, I mean, I think that's another way to mention his blackness. And not to say that whites can't possibly be cool, but there is a literature that talks about how we tend to associate coolness with blackness. And, yes, and so I think people were drawn to that type of charisma, you know, in part because we tend to be drawn to basketball players and hip-hop artists. And, yeah, you know, I think that it is acknowledging the ways that African-Americans have influenced American culture broadly for all Americans to partake of it. You know, I hear the reader's frustration with people talking about President Obama's accomplishment as being the first black president. And it's not something to minimize, but it's also not the only part of his legacy as president. And we're going to spend, you know, that's something that he's going to deal with. It comes with the territory of being a historic first, that people are going to remember that first and that they may not remember all of the substantive things that a person did as well. Does that mean that I think President Obama wasn't cool? He seems pretty cool to me. I've only shaken his hand a couple of times. I mean, that was before he was president of the United States. So, you know, I can't say for sure. He and his wife both project a certain comfort level, and they seem like the type of people that you would want to hang out with at a barbecue. So I don't want to deny that. But I think, you know, we should also keep in mind that people, you know, reportedly, I'm not basing this on any empirics, but the narrative was people elected George W. Bush because he was the kind of guy you wanted to go have a beer with. And, you know, people were drawn to Donald Trump because of his success. Some people viewed it as gauche, but some people aspired to the type of success that he projected in his television show in particular. So I think that they're different types of cool.
Well, I know we're supposed to let lots of years pass before we, you know, start, you know, rating presidents or discussing a lot about their legacy. But what, I mean, on this day before his last day in office, what do you think is one of the biggest parts of his legacy?
Well, I mean, I think in terms of the rankings, this is going to be completely vague. He's going to rank below George Washington and FDR, but he'll rank above James Buchanan and Warren Harding. So I say that to say he'll be somewhere in the middle, and he might even be in the top half, I think, by the time the historians get through with their rankings. He will be judged in part according to the presidents who come before and after him. And so if we think about the low approval ratings that George W. Bush had when he was leaving office, President Obama, by comparison, looks much, much better. President Obama will be given credit for having pulled the U.S. economy from the brink of collapse. He will be given credit for the social transformations that we've seen in American society, particularly with respect to LGBT issues. He will probably, you know, lose some points for not being able to completely solve or not solving at all the problems in Iraq and Afghanistan. You know, I think he's going to deserve some negative credit for the consequences of pulling out of Iraq and creating the void that did from which ISIS emerged. There are going to be questions amongst some who rate presidents about his record on civil liberties sort of continuing in the legacy of George W. Bush in terms of surveillance and other kinds of things. So, you know, I think, you know, at the end of the day, his record will not be something to be ashamed of. But he, you know, he probably isn't going to, you know, rank, you know, at the same level of a George Washington or an Abraham Lincoln or a Franklin Roosevelt. And I think in part, you know, part of the reason why we rank them so highly is because they were either creating things anew or because they were dealing with tremendous crises. And while the recession of 2008 and 2009 was a definite crisis, it doesn't quite match the crises that Franklin Roosevelt faced with the Great Depression and with World War II. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, he will be viewed as a perfectly fine president. I think his legacy is also going to be inextricably tied to Donald Trump's presidency. So if Donald Trump actually has a good presidency, if he's able to make remarkable change, if he really was the shakeup that needed to happen in Washington, then by comparison, President Obama's star dims a little bit. If President Trump comes in and his presidency turns out to be a disaster, then by comparison, President Obama is going to look better.
You know, I wanted to, speaking of the first black president, President Obama was asked to reflect on being the country's first black president in the news conference yesterday, and whether or not he thought there would ever be another black president. And here's what he had to say to that.
If, in fact, we continue to keep opportunity open to everybody, then, yeah, we're going to have a woman president, we're going to have a Latino president, and we'll have a Jewish president, a Hindu president. Who knows who we're going to have?
Now, he did say if we keep opportunity open to everybody. It seems as though perhaps that comment was another not-so-subtle comment about President-elect Donald Trump. Or is that how you see it?
He did talk during the press conference about maintaining voting rights and hoping that that would continue going forward. So I think that was definitely directed towards the Trump administration, towards Jeff Sessions in particular. But in terms of his, prognostication about whether or not we would see diverse presidents in the future, I think that that's right. I think, you know, America is changing demographically, and so the pool and the bench of candidates will likely change. And, yes, it is contingent on making sure that everybody has equal access to politics, but we already see that changing. And one of the things that I would point out that he didn't say is that not just will we see diverse presidents, we'll see Asian American, Latino, women presidents of the United States, we're also going to see those diverse candidates coming from both parties. And so it is not inconceivable that, you know, the next historic first president, or perhaps, you know, the second next historic first president will be somebody who is a Republican. I mean, I can't help but look at Nikki Haley, who had her confirmation hearing yesterday for UN ambassador, knowing that she's got executive experience and knowing that she's burnishing her foreign policy credentials by being UN ambassador. It wouldn't be completely surprising to see her run for president, one day in 2024 or something along those lines. So, I think now we will see that. As a result of it. And I think we need to mark where we were. I don't think people in 2006 or 2005 seriously thought that there would be a first black president in 2008, even if Barack Obama were on their radar as a result of that 2004 DNC address. I don't think people thought it was going to happen that quickly. I remember having a conversation with my own father where he was like, oh, that's not going to happen in my lifetime. It might happen in yours, but maybe not in mine. And so the fact that this happened means that this is, in fact, possible. And I expect we're going to see more of that coming forward.
Lee in Madison is with us. Hello, Lee.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a comment about saying that he's a black president. He is. His mother was white, and so was his mother's parents. And if it wasn't for his mother, he wouldn't be where he is. And I am very sad that his mother was not alive while he became president. And I vote for a person not because he's German or whatever, or the color of his skin, but for his principles or her principles, and that's what I believe. But I think there should be. I don't think there is a pure black race. And
well, I don't know if we want to go quite into all these details, but I Lee, appreciate that. I guess she didn't vote for Barack Obama based on skin color, and she wonders why we refer to him as the first black president.
Well, I mean, so it's great that she didn't. However, there were some people who did vote for him because he was black, and there are some people who voted against him because he was black. And so we can't pretend that this is a colorblind society. And so race definitely did factor into President Obama's election and reelection. About the biracial issue, yes, President Obama is biracial. And yes, his mother and her parents played, a crucial part in President Obama's upbringing. I don't think he's denied that by any stretch of the imagination. At all, but the reality is, in the United States, there is a history. That history is changing, but historically, people who had any known black ancestry, regardless of whether or not they had a white parent, were counted as black. And so culturally speaking, that tied many biracial people who had black ancestry to the African-American community, not to the exclusion of their white ancestry always, but there's just an acknowledgement that's there. And so there are plenty of notable African-American figures who were, in fact, biracial. We could look at people like Frederick Douglass, like Booker T. Washington, for instance. There are a lot of people who were, in fact, biracial, but society marked them as black, and so they chose to identify with the African-American struggle. My friend and colleague, soon to be departing for Northwestern, Natasha Truthway, former poet laureate of the United States, who is also biracial, you know, said, "You are what the cops say you are." And so President Obama is seen as being African-American. In fact, he and I are actually relatively similar in skin tone. He's a little bit lighter than I am. And I have two parents who identify as black. So I think it's also that acknowledgement that sometimes it's hard to tell what people are unless you see their parents, unless you know what their history is. He's choosing to put his lot in with African-Americans because that's the group that's most likely to be discriminated against. But it is not to the exclusion of his white ancestry at all. You know, there are other people, particularly younger people, who might be more likely to identify themselves as being biracial, but even they sometimes take cultural measures to identify themselves with their African-American heritage and to affirm that.
Yeah. Well, let's take, before our next news break, take a quick listen to what President Obama had to say about economic and racial inequality.
I worry about inequality because I think that if we are not investing in making sure everybody plays a role in this economy, the economy will not grow as fast, and I think it will also lead to further and further separation between us as Americans.
So, Professor Gillespie, there's a lot of talk as to how much President Obama did on issues regarding inequality. How do you think he did?
You know, there are going to be critics who will argue that he didn't do enough. And in particular, their critique is that he didn't necessarily provide targeted support in places where we know certain groups are more likely to be adversely affected by the loss of jobs. And so, you know, he was critiqued openly by the Congressional Black Caucus for not doing enough to target black unemployment in particular. And if we still look at unemployment rates by race, you'll see that there are differences. So blacks, you know, are much more likely to be unemployed than their white counterparts are, and Latinos are more likely to be unemployed than their white counterparts are, and they would argue that that required a targeted solution to address that consistent gap that places black unemployment, for instance, usually at 1.5 to 2 times the rate of white unemployment. There are those who would argue that there hasn't been enough done, you know, in areas that were formerly manufacturing centers smoothly transition those communities and the economies in those areas from manufacturing work to good-paying tertiary sector work. And so, you know, some people would attribute that change, which has been going on for generations. This is not just related to the Obama administration, to the, you know, rise in support for Donald Trump and the shift away for working class whites away from the Democratic Party toward the Republican Party. And, you know, and then there is the sort of critique that the recovery was, in fact, anemic and that we have record income and wealth inequalities. And so, you know, those are things that are left undone. Mm-hmm. And so what we will see is whether or not the Trump proposals actually help to narrow those gaps at all, those unemployment gaps, whether or not meaningful, well-paying, skilled jobs come back to these Rust Belt communities. Or
we'll pick up on this point after we check the news. Mm-hmm. We are talking about the issues that were raised in President Obama's final news conference as president yesterday, and we're welcoming your reactions. We're welcoming the issues that stood out to you. We are welcoming your thoughts on President Obama's presidency. What will you remember him for? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. You know, we got a lot of other issues to get to yet, including what President Obama had to say about why he commuted the sentence of Chelsea Manning. And he talked about the future of LGBT rights. He also talked about whether he was hopeful or not for the future, and we'll talk about that as well. But first, Mike in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Mike.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I voted for President Obama twice. I don't think he was a perfect president by any means. No one is, obviously. But I want to point out that President Obama didn't have a major scandal, either personally or politically, in his second term as in office as many presidents who've had two terms have had. And related to that, and I don't want to get to, you've already talked a lot about the race issue. However, I think it's important, related to that, that President Obama had to be, I think that carried a weight. He was the first black president. He had to be like Jackie Robinson in the sense that he had to almost be perfect. He couldn't be too much of this or too much of that. And I think he carried that weight on him every day. And, you know, I just think he was he's a shining example of what a president should be. And mark my words, when things go south in the next 4 years, they're going to all blame it on him.
Our guest is Andra Gillespie, an associate professor of political science at Emory University. Professor Gillespie, your reaction to that?
I'll definitely agree with the first part of that. I don't think there was any margin of error for not just President Obama, but really also for his family. And so the fact that President Obama's White House is a relatively scandal-free White House, the fact that, you know, he and his wife are beloved, the fact that his daughters were allowed to grow up, and that they appear to be successful people, and that the only, you know, crazy things that we've heard are that there are pictures of Malia with beer pong, and, you know, maybe with marijuana at Coachella, I think are relevant testaments to the fact that they knew the burden of the role that they were taking about being the first black family in the White House.
Yeah. You wouldn't agree with the second part because I guess Mike thought that things are going to go south or down the tubes in the next 4 years and that somehow President Obama will get blamed for that.
Well, I mean, you know, I think we have to wait and see what happens, knowing that we don't know yet what's going to happen with the Trump administration. I think it will depend on the nature of the problem. Would I be surprised if people did try to go into campaign mode to explain away problems? Perhaps, but I think it really does depend on the facts around the particular case and what the particular problem is. If it looks like it's a legacy problem, it's a carryover from the previous era, then yes, they will definitely try to do that and may be effective in doing so. But if it's something that looks like it's a completely new problem that was completely of their own creation, try as they may to be able to do that, that might resonate with their hardcore supporters, but the rest of the country might not buy that.
Let's clip off a few more issues that were covered in the news conference. Very early on, President Obama was also asked about Chelsea Manning. Chelsea Manning had her prison sentence commuted by President Obama earlier this week. Let's take a listen to what President Obama said about that.
I feel very comfortable that justice has been served and that a message has still been sent that when it comes to our national security, that wherever possible, we need folks who may have legitimate concerns about the actions of government or their superiors or the agencies in which they work that they try to work through the established channels and avail themselves of the whistleblower protections that have been put in place.
So Chelsea Manning was sentenced to like 35 years in prison for revealing military documents. What are your thoughts on President Obama commuting her sentence?
I was actually frankly shocked. I understand the rationale that typically people who are convicted in espionage cases don't get sentences as long as even the 7 years that Chelsea Manning will serve before she's freed from prison. But I think that I think it's shocking because of the magnitude of the documents that she took and turned over to WikiLeaks. And I think right now, given the prominence of WikiLeaks in the news, the prominence of WikiLeaks in this past election, and I think the perceived threat that WikiLeaks is to intelligence, to national security in general, to some people, I know that there's some people who view them differently. I think that commutation was in fact shocking. I wonder. I don't know whether or not there was also a strategic motive for perhaps doing this. I know that WikiLeaks said that they would be willing to extradite, or Assange would be willing to be extradited to the United States if Manning were pardoned. And now they made it very clear that a commutation and a pardon are two different things, and so he's staying in the Ecuadorian embassy as a result of it. Or even if that was a prod to the incoming Trump administration to deal with WikiLeaks and to acknowledge the fact that WikiLeaks was used as part of a campaign that ended up helping Donald Trump win the presidency. So not to say that the Russians succeeded in hacking voting machines, but that they were involved in using WikiLeaks to help propagandize against Hillary Clinton, I think is an issue. So, and I'm not quite sure if that was part of the calculation, and even if it were part of the calculation, whether or not that it would actually reach its intended outcome. So, I'm still waiting to see what the eventual fallout is going to be as a result of this particular action.
Yeah, President Obama's time in office was a time of a great deal of change for LGBT rights, including the repeal of the military policy Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the legalization of same-sex marriage. President Obama was asked in the news conference yesterday if he saw that progress being erased under a new Trump administration. And here's what the president had to say about that.
I don't think it is something that will be reversible because American society has changed. The attitudes of young people in particular have changed.
So he says it's not going to change because young people won't let it change.
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting to point out with this, if you look at Gallup polling, particularly about same-sex marriage in particular, we'll see that the president actually followed the country in his articulation of support for same-sex marriage, and then the Supreme Court followed because the litigation gets up to the court after even he says that he supports same-sex marriage. So in part, we do see the expansion of rights for LGBT Americans really following changes in public opinion about that. So I think that that's important to point out, and that's in part what President Obama was saying. I think without question, President Obama did take some actions that helped LGBT Americans that I think he'll always be remembered for. And there are still areas of contestation. So, for the next administration and administrations, there are still going to be debates about religious freedom, about who actually has to honor LGBT rights for people. We see transgender issues are now coming to the fore, and those are going to be hotly contested. But I think with the president, I would be surprised to see a wholesale repeal of things like Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and a wholesale reversal from the Supreme Court with respect to same-sex marriage, even though that case was, a 5-4 decision.
Yeah, let's take one, I hope, quick last call. Scott in Cedarbrook. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to mention, and you're actually already kind of talking about this, but I think that I personally think that President Obama's greatest accomplishment is the installation of a sense of social and environmental responsibility amongst the millennial set or just the younger generation in general. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it very brief. How about that? He instilled a sense of social and environmental responsibility in us, and most especially young people?
I think that's an interesting empirical question. I would have to check that to see if we could trace some of the causal linkages. I mentioned earlier that there were things that I disagreed with. He was very sanguine about how young people, are always socially progressive. Young people aren't always socially progressive. We still see divides. We may not see them at the same magnitude that you see them amongst the older generation, but some of the same fights, some of the same fissures that we see along race, or along ideology, are present amongst young people, so not to the same degree. So I think we all need to be very, very mindful that while generational replacement is part of the story, it is not, in fact, all of the story.
You know, just a minute ago, the president said, he made the comment, the world's not going to end unless the world's going to end, and essentially said, I think we're going to be okay. Do you think we're going to be okay?
Well, one of the things that's interesting about American institutions is that American institutions are designed to make progress slow and to make change slow. So once changes happen, it's actually somewhat hard to reverse them. And so this is a chance for us to see how resilient our institutions are and whether or not that system of checks and balances that was put in place in 1789 can work. So even if you have a larger-than-life president, they are still going to be constrained in what they're able to do.
Boy, and you're so concise. One quick one. The president is going to hang out in Washington. You think he's still going to be involved in political issues?
Well, one of the things he said in the press conference was there are some issues where he will probably have to talk out and speak out. So I think as it relates to issues related to discrimination and access, if he sees something happening that he fundamentally disagrees with, I think you'll see a very public President Obama.
Yeah.
On other issues, he pretty much conceded that he's going to follow presidential tradition and let President Trump be President Trump and not try to take any of the spotlight away from him.
Thank you so much. Andra Gillespie, Associate Professor of Political Science at Emory University.